Flanders!
What is it?
Game's out there! Made you look!
Welcome back, everyone, to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder once again, joined by Zoe Carr. Welcome, Zoe.
Bart Starr, all parents, watch that episode of The Simpsons. That's what that drop came from. It is elite.
Coops, welcome back.
Good to see you guys.
Where does Bart Starr rate on The Simpsons scale for you?
Oh, it's up there. Yeah. Probably a top 50.
Top 50?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
How deep do you run?
Oh, man. Deep cuts. Okay. Deep cuts.
Wow. What a top five. Like, jeepers. And I suppose they got, 30-odd seasons? Like,
yeah.
You've got to go deep into that. Hey, welcome back to both of you. You can obviously follow along with the Talking Split social media pages on both X and Instagram. You can leave a rating review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also leave comments on Spotify now if you want to do that. So thank you very much for jumping in. We'll get straight into this because, Coops, it's been a while, mate.
It has.
Back in the country?
Yeah.
Yeah? What's been going on?
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like I've been on the road for like 3 months straight. But yep.
Third day in the office, third month of the year.
Yeah.
No coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, wild times. Yeah, love it. It's hard, but we love hard, you know. Yep. And then obviously most recently we're in Japan for our first experience being invited to the B Youth International Tournament in Tokyo. So we're able to take over a select team. Bestie was the head coach. I assisted him. And then shout out to Leanne, our amazing state teams administrator, who was our team manager. And then James McKinnon also joined us, who ended up actually paying his own way, but wanted the experience, wanted to be over there. Awesome. So that was awesome. So I had a really good staff, and then the kids were just outstanding, just yep. High character, great work rate, really enjoyed it and made the most of it. Ultimately, we won the tournament, so that's always nice. But being in Japan to play basketball was really, really cool. Something different. They're obviously a budding basketball nation. You know, the B League is growing, and you know, there's lots of money being spent on it. And some of the facilities that we had access to, you know, both practice facilities and the stadium that they played the tournament in were really next level. Like, they're really investing in their youth basketball. So to be over there and to start to nurture that relationship and hopefully it's something that will continue was really important, not only for our program, our Victorian community, but we're able to take some younger athletes who, you know, we hope will be in the running for the under-16 Asia Cup team later this year. And so, you know, trying to get more of our athletes on planes and experiencing international basketball is only going to benefit them, you know, for hopefully when they wear green and gold.
Yep, you talk about international basketball. What was the style of basketball like? Like, are we talking same sort of tempo that we would play out here, or are we talking walk-ups? Like, what are we looking at in comparison?
Yeah, watch the Japanese national team, and you got quite a similar feel in terms of, you know, most of their teams were undersized. Maybe they had one or two, but really overall they're undersized. So played to strong bodies, like 90 feet of in-your-face physical defense. Lot of aggressive switching, lot of trapping. So they really played to the physicality of their teams and the speed of their teams on the defensive side, and then also did it on the offensive side of the ball as well. So pace, really pushed the tempo. A lot of conceptual motion, a lot of dribble drive, kind of spread you out. Some teams were a little bit more controlled, like had some more actions, but overall still played in, for lack of a better term, a little bit of an undisciplined way around understanding shot selection and the tempo of the game. So they had, like, their top two or three players were really, really talented, but they were playing like 40 minutes. So yep. By the third quarter, those guys were gassed. Their depth fell off, you know, compared to us that, you know, we're able to run pretty strong. And then that shot quality would really hurt them. So, you know, two out of three shots weren't great. And so the fact that we were able to play our brand of basketball, a little bit more discipline, you know, we defend the drive heavily, you know, which obviously helps us. And so it was chip away, chip away, chip away. And as much as you would look at the final scores of some of our games and say, oh, yeah, that was probably easy, it wasn't. Like, those guys played hard. They played to who they, you know, thought they were, but were obviously able to grind it out.
Is there anything you'd change from within your program now based on what you saw over there?
Yeah, just it's the defense. Like, it's to continue to ramp up our ability to defend like they do in the full court for our ability to impact the game on the defensive side of the ball. More trapping. Yeah, I think I've mentioned on the pod before, but hearing a coach talk about, you know, if you want to become better at passing and leading and catching and pivoting, trap more. And I was thinking about on my drive in today, I was like, yeah, we just need to trap more. And I was even thinking about, you know, doing some more stuff where it's 5-on-6, you know, add a sixth defender and just trap the ball or trap the post or whatever it may be, and just really ramp up that intensity and that physicality and dealing with more of the chaos. That would be a big one. And then obviously the, you know, dealing with the defense, you know, our guards' ability to – I remember getting stuck into our guards in the first kind of few days that we were away, saying, you know, you need to be able to get the ball from point A to point B in the seam, get us into our stuff. Like, if you can't do that, you're not going to be able to play here and you're not going to be able to play at the next level. Like, we need guards that we can trust to get us into our stuff.
Yeah, it's – I know both of you have spoken about it a number of times. International basketball is different. Mm. Really cool experience to go and play something you don't normally see. But that's the biggest thing for mine, the takeaway out of all of it, is that the more we can play someone different that plays a totally different style, the better exposure it is. And you know, we've spoken about it at length, I suppose, now. The ability to play European teams when you're based in Europe, super easy. You know, we get to play New Zealand, which is great, like from our end, but it's probably not quite diverse enough. So I think the more we can head into that Asian market in particular, like the Japanese women have been good for years, Zoe.
Yeah, and a lot of what playing the exact same style that Coops is talking about, that fast-paced, they have a little more discipline from the national team perspective. They have a little more discipline. But, yeah, at any time you can obviously see – play against something different is great, but also experience different. So go and see a different culture. Go and see a different city, a whole different land, I think is massive. Learn to adapt to things. When you go on tours, nothing is smooth sailing. There's always something that comes up, if not several. So you need to learn to adapt to what's happened, and to be able to do that in an environment where – you know, a gold medal isn't on the line as such, you know, I think is brilliant. I think the more we can do that, the better.
I was asked by a coach the other day, actually in a coaching course, he's like, oh, look, we might have the opportunity to take my daughter to Portugal for a little while. Do you think we should do it? Would it be hard to get back into the system here? And it's like, do it. Like, don't even think twice. Like, if you have the opportunity to do this, like Portugal right next to Spain for a start. So not a horrible quality of life if you head over in that direction. But just the exposure to different type of basketball, like, you'll be okay once you come back here. Like, there is a level for everyone, and in different streams and pathways and all that sort of stuff, you'll be fine. If you got the opportunity to go and play someone different for mine. I think it's a great way to do it. There's been a lot of school tours, obviously go to New Zealand of late and teams and all that sort of stuff. But I think it's a good thing. The more we can expose kids to it, I think the better in that space.
You know, you make me wanna have my cold chairs, have my cold chairs, have my cold chairs. Come on now.
It's like Coop's never left. Like, it's full Travolta level stuff over there in Kill Bill. Zoe, on the other hand, less impressed. Coach shared out this week. Club coaches Adam and Nicole Walravens, who are the Frankston Bobcats president and vice president. They took the club over at a very challenging time. We're just named the FDBA Club of the Year. They coach a couple of teams each and do an amazing job growing the club again and attracting more and more players each season. Love that one, purely because it's a domestic one. We have so many that come in at that rep level, and no problems with that. Like, we're always happy to hear from anyone that wants to shout out some coaches in there, but I love it, the domestic level in particular, that grassroots level. Growing a club, coaching multiple teams. Like, we see this all the time. Like, this is not unusual that someone coaches three or four teams on a Saturday and they just bounce from one to the next, to the next, to the next. And by the time Saturday night comes around, they just collapse in their couch and just like, all I want to do is watch TV. Like, nobody talk to me for a little while here. Huge. Like, I love that personally. So thank you for that. Coaches, if you do have any coach shout-outs, please do send them through. We want to try and recognise as many coaches as we possibly can in this space. We are into part two of Open Scrimmage, which was the parent questions that came in. Now, we did throw this out on the Talking Split socials last night as well. So for calendar purposes, this is a week and a half after when we recorded it that this will be releasing. So if you have hit me up in between, apologies, you might be on part three. But for now, we're in part two because there is the podcast with Michelle DeHayden that would have come out last week, which is this week, just to keep everyone on their toes.
Moving on.
Yeah, exactly. Don't do what Donnie Don't does.
That is some high-quality work from you, Coops. The first question we've got, how do I find the right coach for my child? Zoe, you can take this first off.
Well, often you don't really have a choice.
You are usually that coach.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do I coach and parent my child at the same time?
Yeah. And obviously level dependent as well plays a part. But, you know, if you are at the domestic level, be thankful you have a coach and you're not having to do it because we see a lot of parent coaches having to step up. At a rep level, you know, that clubs generally release who their coaches are going to be. But I think one of the things that's we should probably start thinking about is whilst you might not have the quote-unquote best coach in the age group or in the level or whatever you're playing, let your child experience all a range of coaches, because the best coach might be considered the best because of, say, X's and O's. Let them experience someone who might not be as good at X's and O's but is an elite communicator, or a different coach that has, you know, high levels of empathy, or, you know, or let them even let them experience a coach that might be really hard on them and get through that with them. We spoke about it whatever week, because that was really hard to follow what you were saying before, Rob, whatever week the pod was on. Let them go through that adversity of somebody that is, you know, holding them accountable regularly, obviously without crossing the line, and help them work their way through it, because, again, that's going to be life. They could get into a job where, you know, it's high stakes and a boss is, you know, micromanaging
demanding.
Or quite on, yeah, quite demanding. So, you know, let basketball be the vehicle to help them with life skills. So I wouldn't really recommend go find the right coach. I'd allow them to experience a range of different coaches and obviously find the positives in each coach. And, yeah, every coach has some weaknesses, but that's life and that's people. But, you know, if there's an area where that's – you feel, you know, your child is being disadvantaged because, say, the X's and O's, I'll use this as an example, isn't quite there, well, that's when you can, you know, seek that outside help of, you know, their SDP coach if they're in that, or, you know, watch some games together, or, you know, tap into your club's DOC of, hey, how can we help? You know, not that coach is terrible, we need something else, more, hey, I want to get more exposure for my son or daughter to, you know, concepts or something like that. How can we do it? And the DOC can then help try and guide you with that.
Thanks.
But I just think don't always go fishing. Grass isn't always greener.
Really, as it turns out. Yeah. It's amazing what can seem great from the outside, and then you get into the thick of it and it's like, actually, this is – you know, we're contributing more money, more time to go further away for what we thought was going to be better coaching, but is actually worse.
Yeah.
Like, it's Coops, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you end up seeing those families that move once tend to move two, three, four times.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real pattern. Yeah, look, I think Zoe knocked it on the head. Like, a lot of it's taken out of your control, you know, and who's available and the clubs and all those sorts of things. So, yeah, biggest thing for me is kind of what Zoe was talking about at the end there is can you offset what's not being covered through your own research? So, you know, we need to get better at skill development because the particular coach we have right now isn't a great skill development coach. Okay, I'm going to go talk to my DOC, leaders in the community, Rob, you know, all those sorts of people. Say, hey, look, we really
just
need...
Just expanded my email inbox. Yeah, that's right. I do not appreciate this at all.
If there's one thing I know about you, Rob, is you don't work particularly hard. You don't have many people bothering you. Really, I mean...
Well, that's two things.
It's just fed up all day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a week, everyone. Yeah. Like, or 2 weeks. When we're recording.
Yeah. Yeah, and just, yeah, and doing that. And obviously that comes into play the higher you go, right? So earlier on, you know, getting the exposure that Zoe was talking about is really important. Go, yeah, be around different people, different experiences, different environments. But if you are kind of moving up the ladder and there's things that aren't there, there's some deficiencies, then, yep, connect with the people in the community and find the good coaches to offset it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd say that facetiously. Seriously, if you are struggling with this, let us know. Mm. Like, this is something we can absolutely help with. And when I say we, me, send it in my direction. You two get enough stuff already, and I know selections are coming up or have just been. Send it in my direction. We'll happily recommend some people because this leads into the next question, which is when should I get my child extra training and what should it look like? So, Coop, is there an age or an ability level you would probably suggest you start looking at this, or is it a little bit of a depends?
Yeah, look, unfortunately, you know, our favourite answer depends. But it's heavily predicated on when the child needs it, when the child is ready, when the kid is proving that they have the energy for it, they have the mental bandwidth, they have room in the schedule. You guys spoke a lot about this on the last episode around the love of the game, and we cannot talk about this more. The similarity, the story of all those kids that have gone on to play at the highest level, no one needed to tell them to go put a basketball in their hands and go get extra shots or go do, you know, those sorts of things. Like, those kids love the game more than anything else in their life. So if they have a spare second, they're going to pick up a ball, they're going to go find a way to play. And that's what's going to show you that they need the next coach or they need the next trainer, or, you know, that's like, hey, you know, I want this, rather than just being like, oh, okay, you're 14. Now we're going to put you with a skills trainer.
Yeah. What about you, Zoe?
I would say there's a few things to look out for. So as Coops mentioned, you know, are they hitting these markers of, you know, can they withstand it from a body perspective, et cetera? And all kids are different. They could also be looking a bit bored in what they're doing because they're not being challenged physically or mentally. So that might be another cue for you too. But I'm going to be a bit annoying here and say, don't. Spend that time lifting. Spend that time doing a different discipline of, say, like, martial arts or dance or something that's going to complement your body and your skill set, because that can then you'll see improvements just in, like, almost organically because of things like that. You know, we've got an athlete, sad, because she's aged out now, that was a junior judo champion. I never had to tell her to make contact. I never had to tell her to get lower. I never had to tell her to seal, because she just did it. And she did it because of the other, you know, discipline that she was doing. So I wouldn't actually go skills trainer, particularly if you're in things like a junior rep and an SDP or something like that, or if you're at a junior representative level and a school. Because you are on court probably far too much already. Spend that time on other parts and get better at that.
It is, and I think you both answered that really well from the perspective of, well, how many times do you go seeking out a personal trainer just on the old fear of missing out? Mm. You go, oh, but my friends are doing it. Okay, they might be, but do you need to be? Like, it is one of those genuine questions. Like, are you just stressed because other people are doing it, or do you genuinely want to go and do this for whatever reason that is? I like the idea of going and doing something else that will complement. Like, if I had to invest money into a skills trainer or an S&C coach, I know where my cash is going, and it's S&C coach. Mm.
Well, and it's one of the things we talk about often, Coops, when we're talking about selections, or so what's the point of difference? Mm. So if you're doing exactly the same as what everybody else is doing with this skills trainer in particular, you're not going to create a point of difference. Being able to move efficiently and have strength, have endurance, have, you know, be able to perform in the fourth rather than only in the first, because as you mentioned before with the Japanese players that deteriorate over time, you know, all those sort of things, that's creating a point of difference for yourself. And I'm not saying don't do skill work. Of course do skill work, but like you said, if there's a choice between the two, go and work on your body, or go and do a different discipline that can complement what you want. Like for mine, if you're looking more for something a bit more like competitive team sport stuff, like get into soccer. Like the footwork required and the scanning and the brain capacity and IQ, I'd go as far to say there's no sport that compares. So, you know, get into something like that if you can. But the reason I say things like dance or martial arts is you also then learn a completely different set of skills from an off-court, off-sport perspective when you're doing an individual sport. Like the things about discipline and drive and competitiveness and that sort of stuff are very different when it's all on you.
I think the other thing too is it doesn't – just because you're – feel like maybe it's time to take on a skills trainer, it doesn't have to be three mornings a week for 52 weeks a year.
Yeah.
Like when we're talking about the point of difference, or it just might be an isolated thing where, okay, my SDP coach and my rep coach have identified that I'm really struggling on my left hand and maybe particularly being able to dribble under pressure. Okay, well, I know that 6 weeks is that rough time to make change. So maybe it's, you know, one morning or two mornings a week for 6 weeks. And all I'm doing is working on my left hand. Like, you know, that's, a, you know, what the Yanks in particular, in terms of having a genuine off season, allows them to do is that they can go away in the break and identify one or two things that they can make genuine change on before coming back. Whereas because we play all year round, we don't have the chance to do that. So think about it. It doesn't have to be big blocks. Little blocks just to make the change that you need to keep your game moving forward.
Yep, and you made a great point before, Coops. Like if your child is sitting around and has no motivation to go and get a ball in hand, you don't need a skills trainer.
No.
Like to be honest, if they're not motivated, don't worry about it. And it's nice to have the shiny toy, but it's just a shiny toy if you don't really know what you're doing with it. So you do need to be a little bit careful. Same sort of deal. If you need help finding people to help you out, let us know and we'll point you in the right direction, because there are obviously some great ones out there. There's some others that probably don't quite provide the same value that others would in that sort of space. We haven't done a podcast on skills trainers for a while. I'm sure Bessie will be
coming back in hot.
Came in with his page notes. Full of notes last time that we did something on that. My child is struggling with an inability to transfer from training court into a game situation. How do you, as the parent, help in that situation, Zoe?
Wow, that's tough.
Yeah.
Because that's where games approach coaching or small-sided games or games of purpose, whatever you want to call it, classic basketball, eight names for one thing. But that's where that comes into it. So from a practice perspective, you put them in those positions. There's probably also a bit of a fear of failure, so they don't want to try anything new. So if I was the parent, I'd just be completely encouraging of, you know, if they do attempt a transfer of a skill set, works or doesn't work, like you're the biggest cheerleader. Now, depending on the age, your child might not want you to do that. But yeah, I think it's it probably requires a conversation too about, hey, what's holding you back from trying this or doing this, and you might find something out as to why. There might be, you know, something going on in the team, or you know, a real feeling there, which then you can obviously take your next steps depending on what that is. But yeah, I think it'd just be a case of, you know, really encouraging the transfer and really allowing them that space and that freedom, which is hard as the parent because that's generally the coach they're looking to for that. But I don't normally suggest this, but it might also require a conversation with the coach as to, you know, why they think the transfer is not happening as well. So obviously come at it from a non-confrontational perspective, because it is just about trying to help the athlete. And then you can come to a solution together. I think if the parent and the coach are on the same page, then all of a sudden it's a consistent voice and you're probably going to see more transfer.
Yep.
Good. Yeah, I love that comment around, you know, being the biggest cheerleader around, you know, faith, not fear. Like, make the mistakes, get out of your comfort zone, and if that's not being applauded enough, then you've got to take up the slack and really just keep reminding the athlete that's how you grow, that's how you get better. So I think that one's really, really important. It's funny that this question's come up because I've had this question come up to me twice in the last month or so from parents in my program, funny enough. And one of the biggest issues is it's the controlled environment. So the practice environment is not emulating the game. So one of the questions I had was from a parent and their son's like really quite an elite prospect, and his shooting performances in practice are not translating to the game. And my answer to everyone straight away is that you're not practicing shooting at game speed. Mm. And I guarantee that that's not happening. Are you sprinting as fast as you can? Like, you know, from point A to point B, fighting for your feet and elevating and shooting, maybe a little bit off balance, or are you shooting with a hand in your face? Are you shooting with a decision prior to the shot? Like, are you really like maxing out shot practice like you would shoot in a game? And 9 times out of 10, it's no. And that's why you're not making shots in a game, because you're
that's
shooting.
That's also not unusual.
No, I don't think many shoot at
game speed when we really put it into perspective, especially if they're in the backyard doing a workout.
That's right.
Yeah. Like, oh, but even at – coaches are up against it even at practice. They're generally 10 kids on a half court.
And everyone wants to shoot the ball.
You got one basket. It's very difficult. But I think one of the other things you probably could look at too is try and find some, you know, either kids around their age – that live nearby or something, get them just playing pickup. Get them just, you know, out where nothing matters. You know, it's a bit of fun, and they can try new things in that area too, because, you know, we see when they've got that freedom and they think it's, you know, if a coach isn't watching, they're probably more likely to have a crack at something and transfer.
Yeah, that's spot on. Because that's the other part for me is the practice environment is not chaotic enough.
Mm.
It's not unpredictable enough.
And you haven't seen 4:30 training down on those courts down there. I promise you it's chaotic. It's chaotic. Yeah, it's a different sort of chaotic, but it's chaotic.
Yeah. Cartwheels are a bit different. Yeah, that's not the chaos we're looking for.
You know, it needs to be more 5-on-5. Like, anything can happen. And obviously that ties into like a pickup or a scrimmage, because that's what the game is. And so much of our practices, you know, that coaches put together, we want it to look good. We want it to be controlled. We're trying to work on something specific. And all of a sudden you get into a game and it's like, oh, this kind of looks like that. And then, oh my God, that player didn't do that. They jumped out and trapped me, or they did this or they did that. And it's like, whoa, I've never seen or experienced this before. So, yeah, just one is, and especially like if you're a parent and they're not getting game tempo shooting, you know, can you guys get together at a court or in the backyard and promote getting them up into game speed for shooting? And then trying to find more chaotic environments that allow them to develop their decision making in the most unpredictable scenarios that they're going to see.
Yeah, no, I really like that because it is something that we hear a lot from parents. Obviously, yes. Coops, you've had it a couple of times, but you know, there's almost a level of frustration with the parent. Like, I see you working on this. I know what you're supposed to be doing. Yeah. Why isn't it working? Like, yeah. And you can just see the tension rising from the stands. It's like, look, it's not because I don't want it to work. Yeah. They're not like, no player deliberately turns the ball over or deliberately misses shots. They all want it to work. Sometimes it just doesn't, or it just takes a little bit longer to get there. And that's okay because you're going to go through different levels of physical maturation as well, where, you know, in under 12s, if you bump into someone, you go flying. In under 16s, you probably hold your ground fairly well. So those types of things can also make a difference. I wouldn't stress too much about it in the younger age groups. It's when you start getting sort of 16s and 18s, if there's no transfer then,
That's
when there might be something, you know, whether it's a mental block, whether it be something else that just plays a little bit of a part there. It's just not quite softly, but just patience, please.
Yeah.
You know, it's the old, you know, farmers don't yell at the crops for not growing. And it's, they don't. They start to manipulate how much water, how much sunlight, you know, do we have the right fertilizer? It's that kind of thing. Shouting at them doesn't help.
Yeah. Well, and skill set regression is a thing. Yep. So they might get it at practice 5-on-0 and look really good. Then you add defense, there's a regression. And then after time, they pick it up. Then you put it into a game, there's a regression. And then it's, then they start to progress. And then all of a sudden it gets to the point where that skill set is unconscious. And when you get there, that's brilliant. That's happy days. If you are in the younger age groups, you might get left hand or right hand layups as your acquired skill, you know, or unconscious skill. So understanding too that obviously, like you said, the different levels are going to have, you know, different things that they can actually transfer into a game. And that's what we tell coaches all the time is you need to foster that and make sure that you're creating an environment where I spend probably 90% of my practice sessions saying, idea was right. Idea was right. Idea was right, and I walk away. I'm like, if I have to say idea was right one more time.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of eyes up.
Yeah.
Eyes up.
Yeah.
No, good job.
It's what it was. Because teaching the decision and the idea is the hardest part. And then you let the decision teach the skill set. So
you guys are going to love our social clip later on. It's I'll preface this now that you've hit on pretty much near on everything that was said in it. But we'll get there.
Well, don't play it.
We'll give the listeners what they want, Zoe.
Like, just for an example, so it's we're doing as we do, not just as we say. Like at SPP, we've started to do some 5-on-5 pass cut only. So just and just scrimmage, like going, like no screens, no handoffs, like we're really focusing on the cut. And it's not structured, it's not this cut. It's like you got to figure it out. You're cutting to create a double gap so we can get downhill, or you're, you know, back cutting because you're being denied or whatever it may be. And just, yeah, in that environment, like I remember the last time we did it, I think we ran it for maybe 12, 15 minutes and the first 5 minutes was just a dog's breakfast. And by the end of it, like the guys – the way that they were cutting and moving and playing off each other was real poetry. It was fun to watch.
Awesome. All right. This is one that every parent has gone through at various stages. How do I handle the car ride home from games or to games? Coops, what have you got? Other than an evil Uber. Laugh over there.
Uber.
Yeah. Biggest thing is you're not their coach.
What if they are?
In the car, you're not their coach.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great answer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because like as soon as you start that, it's the slippery slope. And as we know that there's real research out there that says one of the main reasons that young people quit sport is because of the car ride home. Yep. You know, it's not a fun place. And there's wonderful podcasts and other episodes and all sorts of things that talk about many, many strategies. One is to give the your son or daughter the opportunity to talk. So sometimes they may want to talk about the game, and that's fine. Maybe they want to vent, or maybe they played really well and they want to, you know, talk to you about it. So if they want to talk about it, great. That's fine. When discussing with them, it's not, you know, closed feedback and opinion. It's open questions and encouragement. When it does steer towards potentially some negative areas, can you steer it back to positive? What did you like about the game? Oh, did you have fun out there? Oh, I saw you and so-and-so talking at one point. What were you guys talking about? So there's ways that if they do want to talk about it, that you can help facilitate a way more positive conversation. There's a great story about Trent Dilfer, who's a...
And just before you keep going, do you need me to press the button or we...
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, okay, done. Yeah.
Like a little tingle. Just, yeah, it's been a while. Who's a quarterback? And he would talk about dad hat or coach hat. And so his kids would play and they would get in the car afterwards. And, you know, because he's a coach and obviously, you know, a lot of our parents listening are that. And he would actually say to his kids, dad hat or coach hat. And sometimes they'd be like, coach hat, because they're like, I want to talk about the game. I need your feedback. Like, I want to process this. And then other times they just say dad hat. And he put the dad, you know, figuratively put the dad hat on, and it's like, okay, let's go get ice cream. Mm. You know, or let's like, you know, let's go do something together. Or hey, tomorrow, like tomorrow morning, how about we just, let's go bowling. Like let's go do something fun, you know, and just completely steer it away from the game. So not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but one, just make sure they are letting you know if they want to talk about it or not. Two, do everything you can not to be their coach. Try and steer it back to positives and more inquiry and curiosity rather than closed opinionated feedback. And the more times that you can just have the parent hat on and just say, hey, are you hungry? Or, you know, talk about change something else, change the subject is going to be much better.
And how you package that question is really important. But like if you're going to go with, how did you think you played?
Yeah.
Good. Or bad. It'll be one of the two. Yep. You're not going to get a whole lot more than that from most people. It's like, and this is where I think like the...
But that, that's an inflammatory question,
absolutely
right?
Absolutely.
Like that, yeah, that's you immediately. That's a coach type question. Yeah. And you're, you know, the last thing they want to do there if they've played bad is to actually try and unpack that. Yeah. So as much as you may think you're doing the right thing by asking that question, no.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. But this is where like the journaling and writing down some things after a game I think is really helpful. Because that way, if you're the parent, you can sit there and say, hey, what were the three things that you liked about your game that you put down today? It's like, oh, cool, no worries. What were the three things you didn't go overly? So that way you're talking about it without them actually having to deflect your questions or react in that way. It's just, well, what did you write down?
Yeah.
Here's what I wrote down. Oh, okay, cool, no worries. Like you don't have to validate it or sit there and say, no, you're wrong or anything like that. But I think it's just a really easy way of like, all right, cool, no worries. And if they want to talk after that, they'll talk after that. It's, yeah, I think a lot of parents can go down a bad path by inciting a conversation that maybe isn't ready to be happening yet. It's, and look, who knows? You might be 5 minutes from the stadium. You might be an hour and 35 minutes from the stadium. There's a lot of time that can go. And maybe the first half hour of the car ride's not super enjoyable for either party, but the last half hour might be. Mm. So who knows what that might look like? But it really is a case of wait for the child to come to you on that. And there'll be times where inevitably you're a little bit frustrated with maybe a lack of effort or a lack of care or something like that from the parental seat in the fourth row of the stand. But kids, similar to what we were talking about before, they don't not try deliberately. There might be something else at play there that you just haven't seen it. Like they just might have been having a real bad day and this is compounded by the game.
But that's not a conversation for the car.
No.
Yeah.
So you wait a couple of days and say, hey, like let's say it was Friday.
Yep.
You know, is everything okay on Friday? You didn't seem yourself or, you know, the not so much directly linked to their performance, more just, yeah, you didn't seem yourself at the game. Is everything all right? And they're probably more likely to talk to you about it. But you might get into the car and they might be completely either closed down, which can happen, and that's a really good time to, as Coop said, change the subject. Or they might get into the car and they might want to vent every single thing, and you have to let that happen. One thing I would never tolerate is talking about other players, talking about the coach, because that's a really bad habit to get into, not just as a player but as a person. And especially when, you know, it's one of the things I remember one of my brothers doing really well, my niece. She was, you know, young when it happened, but she sort of started talking about some of the other players. And he said, hey, that's your friend. It's not how we talk about our friends, you know. So it was a really, like, for me, I was like, oh, store that away, because that's about them as a person as well. So I wouldn't allow that conversation to happen, or those, I guess,
sort
opinions.
Of emotions and
yep. Yeah, because it's, you know, hey, we can only control us, and let's, you know, if you want to talk about it, we can talk about it, but we can only control us and what we do.
That was a pretty nice stoicism.
Is that right?
Chunk there.
You knew Marcus Aurelius.
Very stoic there, Zoe, even to the point where Marcus Aurelius has a quote where he says, don't let anybody see you or hear you complaining.
There you go.
Crushed it.
Yeah, nailed it. It's
Iceland, baby.
I've been on a Chris Voss deep dive over the last couple of months. Like any podcast or anything like that I can listen to with Chris Voss. So for anyone that doesn't know, Chris Voss is the FBI negotiator that sort of turned into a business. His book is Never Split the Difference, which is sitting there waiting to be read at our place at the moment, and I just haven't got to it yet. Unofficial book club recommendation. His content around what he does with the Black Swan Group in particular, and how he talks about negotiation tactics in like sales and those types of areas. Like he talks about how he was a suicide hotline operator for a while there, and he talked about the image he had to portray across to people, and it was the late night radio DJ voice. And it's all about the tone of voice, because you're in a great position in a car where you're not eyeballing each other. You can both look. You've got your own outlets if you need it. But they do a lot of work in that group of mirroring, where they don't actually have to come up with a new thought or something to say. They just mirror back what has just been said with sounds like, seems like, feels like. That's how they start everything. So if your child is going, I didn't play well, sounds like you're frustrated. And that immediately gives you the next conversation after that. It doesn't sound like, oh, yes, you did, which can be really dismissive of someone's feelings in that sort of space, or no, you didn't, which definitely incites a different reaction. Like that's how they package their next sentence a lot, and they just mirror back what has just been said, because one, that gives the person validation that they've absolutely been heard, because that is the biggest problem with a lot of our junior athletes at the moment, is they don't feel heard by someone they're talking to. So you can validate that feeling straight away. And then it can be, hey, you seem frustrated. It sounds like you're struggling with this. And then they can say yes or no from that point. But there's no real way to ignore that statement either. They have to respond again. So that keeps that dialogue going throughout. And if there has been a greater analogy for parenting, that of an FBI hostage negotiator might well be the best one there is. But that's kind of what you're going to have to deal with. Sometimes you're going to have to deal with some difficult conversations in the car. The goal is, by the time we get out of this car, can they be in a better space than when they got into it? I don't want to make this worse as the parent in that coaching landscape.
And I think Coop's hit the nail on the head. That is where journaling comes in as well. And it is so important. It's something I haven't been great at, and I'm making sure at the end of every session to remind the athletes I'm working with to do, is you have to acknowledge the good. And there is good in every game. You could have what you perceive as the worst game of all time. There'll be something there that you did well. And one of the things that I think that – you know, again, in talking with my athletes, and is how can you affect somebody else to have a good day? Like, how can you, you know, and that might be your good. Like, yeah, it might be your.
Yeah, you may have had a rough one, but you've been the best teammate, or.
You've helped somebody feel better about themselves. You've helped somebody be better, a better basketball player. You've helped, you know, You've shown what it is to be, you know, a role model and an athlete and like that sort of stuff. You do that, you've automatically got one already that you've done well in that on that day. But there's always some type of positive. And I think the reason I'm not good at it is because I'm in coach mode, which is find the problems and fix them rather than there's a lot of good here. Yeah, we've got this to – I'm not discounting that there are things we need to fix, but there's a lot of good here in it. I made sure I did it at under-20s. I was mentoring some of the coaches up there and with Coops and Bestie, and they'd had just such an amazing experience and an amazing week. And they created history in the end. But after their quarterfinal, I was like – now tell me three things that you've just loved about this, you know, that you've really enjoyed about this, because we sometimes forget to think about those things. And, you know, it was really cool to see because Bestie was like, oh, and it sort of forced him to think about that. And then, he came out with some stuff and then we just ended up talking rubbish about that sort of thing. But it was we forget – I think we lose memories because we focus on the negative. So if we're able to pull the positive out of, you know, every game, our game as an individual, as a team, if we can, we'll remember that game. Because whenever there's a complete focus on the negative, we try and move on from it as quick as we can because we don't want to have those thoughts.
What you said there around that coach mindset of, you know, like see the negative, fix the negative, very similar to a parent mindset.
Yeah.
You know, thinking that way about your son or daughter and being like, you know, there's something wrong or something bad has happened. I need to address that to make sure that they are okay. And that can just naturally sometimes drag you into that car conversation that may be trying to start with the right intentions but end up where you don't want it to go.
Yeah, yep. For sure. And I think if you're not sure if you're having the right conversations, you're asking the right questions, find another adult. It might be a wife, a husband, a sister, a brother, and ask them those questions and see what comes back. And then because they might go, ooh, you know, and you don't realize it at the time and all that sort of stuff. Because ultimately, and we said it in the last pod, all of this stuff comes from love, comes from a good place. Yep. You're trying so hard to give your child what you think they want or need. And, yeah, sometimes, like you said, Coops, it can wander across the line a little bit.
All right, next on. What's more important, court time in a weaker team or stronger side but less court time?
The old reasoning behind your son or daughter not making the first team, they're being put into the second team. Oh, we felt like they, you know, being the best player in the second team, get a lot more court time down there. It's gonna be better for their development.
Yep,
we've all been there.
Yeah, for mine, playing the twos.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like it's playing the weaker team that you get to show some leadership trait in. You get to bring other people along for the ride. You get to work on empathy, because you will probably be frustrated with your teammates at various stages. If you are one of the better kids in that, you get to work on a little bit of emotional intelligence with how do I motivate, how do I get other people involved, how do I bring them along for the ride for me. And let's face it, everyone wants to turn up and play.
Mm. I don't disagree. So I'm 100% on board that. That's why I've always been an advocate for no VJBL team should have 10 players. I think there should only be 8. And the retort is often, oh, but sickness or injury or school camp. So? Like, oh, no, more kids play more minutes. Like, it's, you know, I don't see that as a problem. So that in being in the lower team and playing is great. I liken it to when I was coming through as a junior and we had two super teams in Nunawading and Bulleen. And then we were always third. And, you know, this was pre poaching rules days. So my our phone would ring a lot and about trying to come to these clubs. And thankfully, my mum, she didn't realise what she was doing in saying no. She was like, I'm not driving past a club to go to another club. But I had to learn all those things. I had to turn up and play every week because if I didn't, we probably weren't going to win. So if I didn't perform, and so that taught me not only the consistency in my on-court performance but also what I had to do away from the game to make sure I was ready and all those sort of things. I learned how to grab a team, put them on my back and win us a game when the chips were down and all these sort of things that you don't – and I learned to lose, frankly. Like, I hated it, but I learned how to do it. And I also learned that I hated it so much that I wanted to do everything I could to not be in that position as often as possible. So, I completely agree with you, Rob, on that playing in that team, the lower team, and playing is worth far more.
Yeah, I think the caveat to that is the challenge piece. So if they are, let's say maybe it's the second team and they're going through what you went through, Zoe, with, but maybe start outgrowing that team, which is what you want, right? You actually want them to use that experience to get better, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well then you just got to find ways to challenge. So, you know, if it's their rep team, and their only other basketball team is maybe a domestic team, can they play up an age group in that or up two age groups? So you've got here, okay, they're high confidence, high quality, they've understand how to put a team on their back, they're actually winning. You can see that maybe the challenge isn't there, okay. Let's find the challenge somewhere else. So they're having the confidence building and the challenge to keep them growing.
Or can they train with the the ones and you know, really again get that challenge there as well.
Yep. All right, what if my kid wants to play but is obviously experiencing some negative emotions in doing so? So I'm going to try and unpack this a little bit just in terms of what exactly. I'm going to assume there's maybe some anxiety about getting on court in that sort of world. To be honest, all you can really do is reassure, like, that this is not your identity. This will not define you. What happens, go and enjoy it. For whatever it is. And this ties back into a few of the other sort of comments and statements we've made throughout this pod, to be honest. So we probably don't need to go too deep into it. But if they want to play, they obviously love the sport in that sort of world. But if the negative emotions in doing so might be just fear of failure, it might be, I don't want to play with other people because I don't necessarily get along with them, whatever the case might be, that's part of growth. Like, I think the only thing we can do in that sort of world is support. Along the way, it might be worth a little bit of a chat to the coach and just sort of say, hey, look, they're struggling a little bit with this. Not asking you to do anything. Just be mindful if you could. Here's what I'm doing on my end. If you want to mirror that, great. But that's not a problem. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. The fact you've got a child that wants to play, tick the box straight away.
Yeah, I think
it's a huge win.
Sometimes we also need to admit we can't fix everything. So if it is something that's almost debilitating, like they don't want to step onto the floor, whether it's like due to anxiety or something that goes a bit further, you may need to seek outside help. You may need to get to a sports psych or something, or just some type of counselling. And again, it doesn't have to be every week for, you know, once or twice a week for every week of the year. Might just be, you know, get in and I know we've got a great sports psych that we've sent some athletes to who it's almost just like tune-ups. Like, she's seen them for one or two sessions and then they go back when they feel they need to. It's, you know, so you're not getting drained of cash all the time. But sometimes there's some things that are outside of our skill set that we can't fix, and going and seeking help. I think I said it on the last pod. There's no shame in that. And again, it's coming from a place of wanting what's best for your child.
Yeah, seek outside help. Get to the root cause and then go through that positive support strategy and system to make sure that they keep loving the game and playing the game that brings them joy.
Excellent. I'm a parent coach. What's the first offense you would teach to kids who need some structure?
Need some structure?
Yeah. This, and the wording on this is what's got me as well. Mm. Like, one, do they need structure? because there's part of me that says, no, 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 chaos theory. Let it all go and let, you know, let it play out and then maybe give some guided feedback around that. If I'm going down the path of needing structure within my team, and again, it would depend on what age group we're dealing with here, like under eights, don't worry about structure. Like if you can get five kids on the court at the same time without having a random sixth kid on there somewhere that's, you know, it looks
or
like
they're not just running in a circle, the right-hand side of both sidelines.
A massive win, to be honest. Look, if you need structure, I'd start with like a baseline out of bounds just so they can get the idea of, hey, sometimes we actually have to do some stuff that is not just my natural gut instinct. And even then, I'd probably shy away from it as long as I could. I get this question quite a lot, actually, in coaching courses. And my usual answer, I stay away from actual offense until, like, they're about to go into 16s if I can. Like, I think at the pointy end of 14s, yeah, you can probably give them a little bit in there. But the more they can trial and error and just play and create, I'm actually okay with that for mine. You two, any different?
Yeah, I would... Again, so many moving pieces, right, around age and timing and everything like that. I would start with shape rather than offense. So, you know, again, looking at your group and what's the strengths. You know, are we a five-out shape? Are we a four-out, one in? Are we three-out, two in? You know, there's obviously a variety of shapes it can use based on what you're trying to achieve and to the strengths of the athletes. But thing about shape is it helps you with the floor spots, helps you with the spacing, helps you get a general understanding of kind of how to begin an offense. And then you can add layers after that rather than just being like, oh, we have to run the flex, you know, or whatever it may be. So at least just saying, okay, this is what our shape looks like. So if we, after we transition and maybe we haven't been able to create, you know, high percentage shot early, this is kind of what we want our shape to look like. And then maybe it's just, when you pass, you just replace with the person next to you. So you've got one concept of creating some movement. You've got a shape that, again, plays to your strengths but also is going to marry up with where these kids want to go. And then now you start coming back to all the other reasons as to who are you, how old are you, what are you trying to achieve out of your offense.
Yep, like it. Here's a scenario for you. At under 10, under 12 level, should players who don't commit to training get the same amount of court time as everyone else? In this situation, parents have decided that three games out from finals, that soccer is more important, that their two kids play, so they can't make training, now leaving us with only five at practice, but still expect the same court time and in-game opportunities. If this is not the plight of every parent coach everywhere, I don't know what it is, because this is just a nightmare to deal with, frankly. It's, you know, it is one of those things where, look, no coach walks into every game and goes, you know what? I'd just like to give less court time to some other kids. I think we all go in with the right intentions of, look, the idea is to play everyone if given the opportunity to play everyone. And you know, we've spoken about this before, I think, on the pod, that, you know, for really 90% of the game, court time should be fairly even. But if you have the opportunity to try and win something down the stretch, well, that's when you're probably going to, you know, change and manipulate the subbing patterns a little bit more. But it is one of those things where, what happened at the start of the year? Was this addressed at the beginning? Have you created a rod for your own back with this sort of thing? Have you allowed other players to go and miss practices for other things that have now in or out in that sort of... like? It is a complex one. I think it's certainly worth a chat because we're also in a position where we want kids playing other sports, like for mine. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. So. And if it has been addressed at the start of the year, let's assume it was... then for mine, it needs to be that they're, from a court time perspective, the 90% of the game remains the same, especially if it's like domestic basketball. But their role changes. So if they were a starter, they now come off the bench. If they were first sub in, they're now, you know, they go down the line, you know, that sort of stuff, because there do need to be consequences for things like that. You can't just decide, you know, 3 weeks to go, that everything, you're just going to stop coming to practice. Like, there need to be consequences for that. But it is a lesson that it needs to be addressed at the start of every season, what your standards are. So then you can hold them to it instead of having to try and, you know, chase a little bit at the end.
Yeah, you got to have that in writing, right? Mm. You've got to have it in some sort of handbook or in a player agreement or something. It's written down. Everybody's on the same page. Maybe the athletes sign it, parents sign it, whatever it may be. Like, that is just absolutely paramount. I agree. If it's domestic, it's a non-issue. They can go do a thousand other things and show up for the domestic game and get even court time because that's what it's about. If we're moving into representative and it has been addressed, I agree. Consequences, understanding, okay, yep, we're trying to get some sort of balance. If it starts going higher than that, then obviously it's not okay.
Yep. All right, last question. I love this question. How much should I spend on shoes for my child and what kind? Do not get sucked in, parents, by your child that says, oh, my coach said I have to get these because, you know, these are the most expensive pair and, you know, everyone has to have these. They're lying to you.
Yeah. This is the issue, though, at the moment. I look at some of the price tags on some of the shoes with kids that are still growing. Unbelievable. And then,
not New Balance, though. As proud sponsors of Basketball Victoria, New Balance are great people.
But they're these high price tag shoes are also some of the main contributors to some injuries.
Yep.
Things like, you know, they don't have the right cushioning and support. Yeah. Leaning back on my athlete foot days. Did I say that right? No. But as a fit technician, I think you've got to get what is right for your child's feet.
Yep. And fashion doesn't matter.
Fashion does not matter because it doesn't matter what you're wearing if you're having to sit on the sideline because you've got a stressy because the shoes you've been wearing have zero cushioning or support in it.
That's when fashion matters more because if you're not playing, you may as well look good on the sideline. So as someone that owns a lot of pairs of
fashion,
shoes.
On-court fashion.
Off-court fashion won't matters. Matter.
Yep.
But it's a thing. It really is. And your shoes are a contributor to injury. I used to hate it. I used to really hate it, but I always had to wear ASICs because anything else would kill my feet and kill. I had shin splints and chronic shin splints that are still with me. Like they were that bad that they never actually went away. But if I'm not wearing, if I wasn't wearing, like if I tried to wear, you know, Nikes or Jordans or something like that, that was it. I was out. My legs were done. So, I'm really big on making sure it's the right. Now, if you're one of those lucky people that can wear those and get away with it, well, go nuts. You know, that's fine. But find out first.
Especially when you're going to grow out of your shoes, the way kids go through. And look, if you're on court like 4 to 5 times a week, like some of our kids are, you're churning through those things every 4 to 6 months,
yeah,
potentially. Like that's going to cost over time. Coops is someone that lived in the era of you either had black shoes or white shoes.
Yeah, that's when East Bay became my friend, so I could have all the cool colorways that I wanted.
When you got that UPS tracking from East Bay as well, like, yeah, man, that was a day.
That was the best. No, look, I totally agree. It's what fits. It's what's best. You know, high arches, flat feet, wide feet, long toes, short toes, all those sorts of things play a part. You know, I really liked low-cut shoes. I liked light shoes, you know, because that's what I felt most comfortable in when I was playing. The other thing to remember is how you do shoes up. So other players actually like doing their shoes up properly.
Really, as it turns out. You get your entire hand down the side.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
How many shoes come off in games? I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
It blows my mind.
Well, remember John Wooden would actually start his first day with his teams at UCLA teaching them how to put their socks and shoes on and tie their shoes up properly.
And that was blisters for a start to make sure they didn't have those, but to also make sure they didn't come off.
Yep, like that's right.
It sounds stupid, but there's something to it.
Well, then the other part is socks too. Mm. So what sort of socks are you wearing? You know, rolling straight into the school socks into your basketball shoes is not a good idea.
Yes.
You know, there's basketball socks that have been made, you know, for a reason in terms of where the padding is and how it fills the shoe out and those sorts of things. And then the other part is DFO is obviously a great place. Like if you know you are going to have to shell out for shoes, you know, getting last year's Kobe's rather than the new version or whatever it may be. That's how long ago I probably bought basketball shoes. Yeah, bringing up Kobe's.
As long as you're saying Kobe's and not like the Kamikazes or something like that.
Yeah. But I like the Kobe's because they were low cut. So yeah. That's why I'm bringing them up. But then the other part is too is online. So, you know, go to somewhere that gets them fitted, you know, podiatrist or athlete's foot or something like that, get them fitted properly and then keep an eye out for sales online so you're not paying $250, $300, $350 for shoes.
Yep, really like it.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
All right, so for social split talk this week, we have one from Johan Cruyff, who is the former FC Barcelona manager, who is the man that developed the Barcelona Academy that everyone talks about. Like, the amount of players that have come through that thing is ridiculous. And Pep Guardiola's former manager. So when he talks, we listen.
And yesterday we had the Dortmund coach, Thomas Tuchel, here speaking very, very interestingly, challengingly. He's famous for having become Dortmund coach because of his successes with youth football. And he said, if I was to go back now, I wish I'd made it more difficult for the young players. I wish I'd made them play on bad pitches. I wish we'd taken away the bus driver sometimes, that we made the air conditioning in the dressing room not work. He said, maybe we're in danger of making things too simple for the kids that we're developing because of the brilliant facilities that we have. Given your background and your belief in street football and overcoming problems, do you understand the type of thing that Thomas was trying to communicate?
Yes, and I think the same way. Because, like I said, when we were young, we could play the street. You can't play in the street anymore. But a lot of times with small children, I was playing in the parking lot. So what does that mean? It means that the surface is bad. When you fall down, it hurts. So you try to learn not to fall down. For small players, they quickly understand they've got to be technically much better than the other, because if he's too slow, the big one will hit him over and he will be hurt. Of course, we had a lot of complaints. We said, well, my child fall down. Well, the game of football is not to fall down. I mean, you mustn't fall down. So, or you've got to organize it one way or the other. So I always think that these sort of things help you to think. The problem today is a lot of coaches are thinking for them. I always think that put a problem there and think about it, or try to do something, or try to. And as soon as you think, or as soon as you do something you're not capable of, or you don't know, you're getting better. It's like you're right-footed, you learn to shoot with your left foot. Of course you make a mistake, but as soon as you control it, you learned a lot. If your right foot is good, you'll never be better.
Great message in there. For a number of reasons. One, I've had a long-standing theory that our players flop about too much because they have lovely wooden floors that they can slide backwards on. You can't do that on asphalt.
Oh, remember like the gravel rash? Man, oh, my God.
What was worse is when you went like palms down and you'd have that little bit of skin that would lift up and there'd be the little pebbles that
and
would sit underneath it.
And then you get in the shower and it's like worst. Torture.
The worst. But there is something to it. Like, look, we are incredibly lucky in Australia in particular that we have amazing facilities that our kids play in. There are plenty of times where you might go to a venue where there's 1 foot runoff around the sidelines and it's like, hey, this is not ideal. Understand it. It's an indoor basketball stadium. Oh, there's wooden backboards. Yep, understand it. Ultimately, there's backboards. There are plenty of venues around the world in countries that don't have the facilities that we have access to here, and they find a way to compete on the world stage. So I think for us, the biggest things that I take out of that is, one, be grateful for what we have. Two, free play, as we've spoken about multiple times during today's pod. I love the thing about stay on your feet, because if you're small, yes, you get knocked over, but if you're technically proficient, they can't catch you. So that matters a lot, and the problem solving. Work on the other side of the body. Just because you're very good on your right does not necessarily mean you're very good on your left. Find different ways to go about it. So for mine, Johan Cruyff, I'll try and put the link to the entire thing on that, because it does go in there. Don't know where the mood music came from halfway through, but it did add to the effect. I felt like it's got people on the edge of their seat. But Coops, Zoe, thanks very much for jumping into the pod this week. Coops, we'll let you go and sleep off some jet lag and do what you need to do there. Coaches, we'll catch everyone next week, or maybe the week after, or maybe the week after that, depending on when this drops. But we'll catch you again at some point in the future.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.